Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
Well, no, it's reptile. Like,
with that move,
one of the stances of reptile. Like, that's the thing. This is the interesting thing about Mortal Kombat 10 specifically, is every character has those three move sets.
Yeah.
So the tier list is the weirdest thing to just visually look at, because you look at the tier list and it's like, oh, Cassie Cage Brawler is tier 4, like, or rank 4, not tier, but like rank 4. Like, that's fucking high. Cassie must be a good character. And it's like, Cassie Cage Hollywood is like 50, like the worst. Yeah. You're like, really? So like, it's kind of awkward because the reptile that's number one is like 25 character slots away from the other two reptile styles, which I thought was, I actually kind of like that. It's kind of cool where you're just like, well, if you master this one style of the character, they're like really good.
Yeah.
And I think that's neat. I think it's a cool design. I really like it. It's fun.
Well, it's because then you can have mirror matches of
different characters. Different characters. It's really cool. Yeah, because like I played you with the cowboy Aaron, and like he has two other modes, and the cowboy one isn't even the popular. That's the thing. The cowboy Aaron Black isn't even the popular one. The one that's like better is like a totally different mode. Yeah. That's just the only one I know how to use.
Yeah.
So because when you play the story mode, you're locked into the character at not what you pick. It's like it gives it to you. So you're like, you're playing Sub-Zero, Grandmaster, like. Play it. So you're kind of stuck in it, which is, you know.
All right, I gave you 3 whole minutes.
You're actually recording?
I gave you 3 whole minutes on Mortal Kombat.
I'm talking about things that are far more interesting than tabletop games.
I gave you your 3 minutes on Mortal Kombat. Hey, everybody, welcome to Game Classy.
Game Classy.
Part 2 of our in-depth review of Assassinatorium.
And Mortal Kombat.
And Mortal Kombat.
Hopefully people remember the Game Classy jingle. Do you remember I used to do that every episode?
You used to do that every episode. With me, I'm Joe, and with me as always
is Pat.
Is Steve and the, what should I call him?
Pat Bale.
Pat Bale has finally unbailed.
Pat Bale is not bailed.
He has not bailed.
He is here. He's here with us.
Hello, everybody. I am here.
He's fresh off his erection interviewing Bruce Boxleitner again.
No, Bruce wasn't there.
So did you interview anyone at T2E2?
Yeah, it was Matthew Daly and Trevor Kraft.
Who the fuck are them?
The creative staff of Lantern City.
Oh, okay.
So they were there again, so we got to talk to them.
I saw that they're kind of like regrouping and launching it as a comic.
They are, and the TV show...
might be?
Well, it had... kind of hit a dead end, and now
did they try selling it to Netflix?
Well, that's where they're at right now, because the streaming services blew up, and they were they have all their own original content, so they're shopping that right now.
That, like, no joke, I think that's the new future for visual entertainment, is just like picking a streaming service and going with it.
Yeah. Hulu, Netflix. That's when I'm finally get my Mindy Project again is on Hulu. So thank God for that.
I don't know what Mindy Project is, but I'm glad you can finally watch it again, Joe.
Oh, you have no ideas. His name
is that a Star Wars cell phone case?
No, it's a spec.
Okay.
I got a new phone.
I thought that was an Imperial symbol.
I finally got upset with my phone because it was getting to the point where I was texting people, and I would write out the text, and then it would go.
How could you possibly be dissatisfied with an Apple product?
It was because I had an iPhone 4 for 3 years. I bought it before my daughter was born.
An Apple product.
Yeah.
Super potato.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, so what do you want to talk about?
Dragon Strike?
Do you want to talk about Dragon Strike?
I now own a complete copy of Dragon Strike.
So do I.
With the VHS. Nice. How much did you pay for yours?
$5.
No way.
Yep.
Bogus. Where'd you get it?
I got it at Historicon. Little Wars.
Okay.
And I know you would never walk there, so that's why I knew it was mine.
I would never I would never go there. I wouldn't be caught dead there. I would lose all of the street cred I've built up if I was seen at Historicon.
I bought three things there. I bought a Dragon Strike. I bought a copy of this old school sub game. And I don't know if you remember it, but it was basically a 3-tiered sub game. So it was like a battleship. Except it was like on a 3D, there was like 3 levels. And so you could move your subs.
A submarine game, you mean?
Yeah, you could move the subs between the levels. I had it when I was a kid.
That I don't know.
I've seen a game like that.
Unless it's called like something Periscope. Is it called something Periscope?
No.
Okay, yeah.
But that was complete too, but I'm going to try and flip that for a couple bucks.
The only naval game I ever owned was called Bermuda Triangle, and it was really cool.
You never owned the, what was that floor game? Where there was like a huge fucking Milton Bradley floor game where you had like a big battleship. And then you'd had these little submarines that had these little red discs in them, and you flick them.
No,
I thought a lot
I never
of
had
kids,
that.
A lot of kids had that. As
I never. I actually stayed away from the manual.
Torpedo Run. It was called Torpedo Run.
That's the
big one.
That's the game you have.
No, I have that one as well. I made Anthony
the mat game you just described is Torpedo Run.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that one. I made Anthony go in with me because I only had like $10, and I think the guy was selling it for $20 at whatever place we bought it from. And I'm like, no, we have to buy this game. So. Yes, I have a copy of Torpedo Run at my house.
I avoided most of the manual dexterity games other than Crossbows and Catapults.
Oh, God bless Chris.
Oh, we should that game. I completely forgot about
that's
that game.
It's a good game.
Oh,
I have two copies at home.
It's kind of funny because it's simultaneously...
the best and the worst game of all time?
It's mostly the worst. It launched my hatred of manual dexterity games, which I still carry to this day.
That's the one that had the like the catapults with the... That
right,
you had
the things
you had
you actually
had to
fire.
Bands and everything.
Right, and, yeah. I learned to hate the game for it. I learned two things that day. One, to hate manual dexterity games in general, and two, to hate games for their components. Because I had a cannon, I would load the cannonball, I tried and shoot at the fucking wall, and it wouldn't fire. It would just misfire. And then, like, that's your turn. Like, the toy didn't work. You lose your turn. So I'd give it to my friend Tim, and he'd be like, boom, I knocked over 6 parapets and all of the guys are dead. That's 100 points to me. And I'm like, this is fucking bullshit. I'm like, all he did was shoot his gun.
Well, I was actually pretty good at it, and I learned at a very early age that you had to use the thick rubber bands.
Yeah.
Because that was the way that you got the extra power.
The crossbows, we both were pretty even on. The ones that were actually just the plastic toy components, the cannons, that was where it all broke down.
I don't think I ever had
bad
ones,
luck with it.
I never had the ones with the cannons. I had the original one from, like, the early 80s. Just crossbows and catapults.
The thing is, it's not about original. There was a ton of expansions for it.
Yeah.
There was this one that came with cannons, this one that came with just catapults, this one that came with just... There was one that just came with just crossbows. There was a lot of games in that line that were all supposed to be used together.
I actually had one that was a Minotaur. And the Minotaur was about the size of a He-Man figure. And you pulled him back. And you'd put him up against the wall, and then you'd let his head go forward. So it's like you'd hold his feet, and you'd pull his head back, and he would headbutt the wall. And that's how you knock down the walls.
That's about it.
That's about it.
The real question is what are we going to title this cast as our new clickbait article?
I was thinking Assassinorium Part 2.
I don't think treading the same ground is right.
Yeah.
They unveiled some new Ultramarine things, right? There were some new Ultramarine thing.
Oh God, I don't know.
I saw it on Tabletop Gaming News. Thanks, Polar Bear. There's some fucking new stupid thing where you can like slap very expensive resin bits on your shitty fucking plastic Space Marines and be like, my Space Marines are different than your Space Marines, so they're better. So we should find whatever that's named, and like I think it's like the Legionario Assassinorius Scaldum, and we should just do that.
Speaking of which, I
the
was
Legionario
actually,
Assassinorium Scaldum.
Yes, when we talked at the last podcast, I was actually wrong about the Assassinorium game.
Assassinorium.
I was so. I apologize to everybody who listened because I was wrong. I did get my facts wrong.
You apologize?
Yeah. I don't
believe it.
Well, okay, so I got so first thing, we made fun of it because it was a $100 box set with 16 figures. It's actually a $120 box set with 19 figures. So
you know what?
These prices
you,
are insane.
You specifically really dropped the ball.
I did. I mean, seriously. $120 for that box set. Actually,
I'm happy with my $25 copy of Dragon Strike.
Dragon Strike.
Yeah, dude, it's so good.
It's got a VHS.
Dude, Lord Death,
it.
Two claws up.
So, in case anybody is unaware of what we're talking about, when it comes to the
Dragon Strike,
the trolling for the YouTube comments.
Oh,
so we titled the last podcast. What did I say?
In-depth
review of Assassinorium Execution Force, and it pretty much just blew up. I mean, not blew up. I mean, it got over 2,000 views.
It blew
which
up
is,
for the terms of our podcast.
Yeah, in terms of our podcast, our shitty little
which,
podcast.
Which, like, 2,000 views is literally nothing in the world of YouTube.
Yeah.
I play on podcasts. We float around 25 to 12
Well, that's
views.
The thing. You might think that 2,500 and 25 are a huge difference. Like, wow, I can't believe so many more people looked at it. But if you look at the YouTube algorithm, the difference between our podcasts for YouTube is nothing.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Like, they're like, oh, 25 views? Fuck you. Oh, 2,500 views?
Fuck
you too.
Yeah.
Fuck you too.
So
until you get to, like, you need to be talking, like, 25K and more.
Yeah. So, I mean, now, literally in the right underneath where I wrote, where it says the title, I wrote underneath
the description of the video.
The description of the video. I said, Joe and Steve do not talk about Assassinorium or do not review Assassinorium. In fact, they just make fun of it. First line on there. So essentially, every comment we've gotten was, this is awful. The heading is clickbait. And you guys say a lot of words, but precious few are of any interest.
That's that one guy. That's the best. I love that. The thing that's great about everyone thus far who is legitimately like shit on our podcast has done it in a very loquacious manner.
Yes. Yeah.
Like it's always like, wow, that was a really classy insult. Thanks. Yeah. I really appreciate it. They're not just like, your guys are gay. 420 blaze it. Like, yeah. It's not that.
Well, I mean, and that's... But the thing is, this is also the reason why I love the fans of the podcast, because our fans just fucking get it. They get it.
Did you find them vulgar?
Did you find them vulgar? And then the guy's like, I never said they were. Why would I say they were?
No. He's like, did you think they were? That was his thing. He asked our listener. He's like, I didn't think they were particularly vulgar. Did you?
Why do you think they were?
Fucking good.
And then the guy says, Cybo Goblin just says, just full of one vulgarity after another, trashing a stupid baby's game. 10/10 would listen again.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. 8/10, too much water.
Yeah, it's just like, I love our fans because they just get it. They just know, just roll with it, make fun of the people, and, you know, they don't have to defend us. Never feel like you need to defend this shitty-ass podcast. Care. Yeah.
We don't care. We won't defend ourselves.
You guys talk down about your own podcast quite a bit, and it's actually pretty good.
We won't defend our own podcast.
Yeah, no. Yeah. This is one of my best ones.
None of the podcasts in the entire Planet Arbitrary page are as bad as the actual Planet Arbitrary podcast, to be fair.
Hajman, Hajman. First up, terrible generalization regarding fantasy, Bowman in a tower. Steve, what won the tournament?
Bowman in a tower.
That's right.
With four special characters or three or whatever.
And wasn't
it
the grand tournament or
It was the UK Grandmasters.
Yeah.
UK Grandmasters was won by the exact list I described, which is the stupidest list ever.
Secondly,
he tabled everyone.
Secondly, I was really hoping for an in-depth review of the Assassin game. Why?
The thing that I was annoyed, also chuckled about is the fact that anyone who tuned into that YouTube thing expecting us to do an in-depth review, the shit was fucking impossible. We could not have physically done an in-depth review of the game at the time we uploaded.
It wasn't even released.
It was not released. Nobody, GW does not do early release copies for anyone.
No.
So there is, if you are a G, that like, obviously the people who are attacking or like being butthurt that we didn't review it are GW fans. If you're a true GW fanboy, you should know that there's no way we would have it in our hands. What do you think about Assassinorum?
Well, I mean, I understand that it's very difficult to get. And I mean, it's so hard to get that. Even the Games Workshop that's by my house, it's so hard to get that the store's not even open. You can't even get in there to get the game.
Would you say it is the amiibo of miniatures games?
I know nothing about it, but if you're describing it that way, it must be.
No, the amiibo of miniatures games are those hardcover books that GW puts out with like 200 copies. And then they're like,
ones that actually have huge value?
Yeah, no. And then they're like, the 200 copies we put out have sold. It's a success.
But what is the deal with the Games Workshop not still being there, but never open?
It's a one-man store.
Yeah.
So GW went to this method where all of their stores are just a manager. There's no other people there.
Yeah.
So every time the manager is not there, the store is closed.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people might not understand, newer listeners, like a lot of people don't understand that, like, well, I guess I'm not going to speak for Joe here, but like for me, like I shit on GW so hard and like I hate GW so hard and I rage on it so hard because of how good they were and how good, well, I mean, good being relative, but like, They had it in a very good position.
Yeah.
And what they could have become and what they could have done. It's kind of like, I mean, Pat, you're the resident video gamer. It's like Capcom and Konami. Like,
yeah,
that's the perfect example. It's like Capcom, the way Capcom and Konami are currently handling their video games is the way Games Workshop is handling their miniatures.
Oh, we just had a Helen Keller moment there. I understand what you're saying now.
Yeah.
It's like, you're water.
The water. But that's like, and so like, it's really, it's like, I loved them so much. And like it actually pains me to like shit on them super hard, but they fucking deserve it.
What was
the
turning point for games? Like, what was it?
Warhammer Fantasy 8th edition for me.
For me, it started in 7th edition because I found 6th edition to be a very tight and very good rule system with only a few issues, and immunopsychology being one of them. And, shit, I forgot his name.
Rob Hawkins.
Thank you. I was like, I got put on the spot and I forgot. So Rob Hawkins talked about, we talked a little bit about this on the Facebook page, but like I said, immune to psychology was broken, and he countered like, well, it's not that broken. And I guess I didn't like explain it enough. The actual rule immune to psychology isn't in itself inherently broken. It was giving it to so many armies across the board, like this whole army is immune to psychology. This whole army is immune to psychology, and they weren't like Skellabones, because Skellabones being immune to psychology is fair, because Skellabones suck ass.
Well, I think what more than that is that it was like the armies were divided in half. Half the armies were immune to psychology, and those armies caused fear and they caused terror, and the other half weren't. So,
yeah, your army wasn't immune to psych, it sucked.
Well, yeah, it
was just bad.
It was hard to compete on a tournament level with that because immune psychology wasn't counted into the point cost to balance out how good
even
it was.
On a casual level. Like, even on a casual level, it makes sense. Because, like, I accidentally tabled people with fucking Tomb Kings Empire.
But that's what I'm saying is that immune psychology wasn't balanced out in the points.
Yeah, it's a little... It's sort of that. It's like mostly
if an army that was immune to psychology had the point cost added into the figures, you could hypothetically, because you could just have throw more orcs and goblins on the table and fight against the Tomb Kings, which were a smaller army.
Right, orcs were overcosted.
Armies were overcosted.
Regardless
of Pat, how you doing over there?
No, I'm following.
The actual issues with like whatever they were, like that was what I thought needed tweaking, and then like removing some of the extra issues, like lap round was stupid. I think lap round as a rule for everything is dumb, but I thought it was really cool for specifically the Chaos Dwarf Hobgoblins to have.
I was going
to
say, what about my Hobgoblins, sir? Well,
With your dirty sneaky git argument, I actually thought that would be cool because in my fantasy realm.
The sneaky git pose.
He has one. So both of his elbows are bent. One arm is up, one arm is down, and they're holding invisible daggers.
Curved daggers.
Can you imagine?
And my feet are in the kind of walking pose. It's kind of like walk like an Egyptian, but I got sneaky get daggers.
Walk like an Egyptian.
Anyway, that would be an amazing cosplay for Gen Con.
Just sneaky gets?
Just go sneaky gets.
Gen Con is not a Games Workshop convention.
I know, but I'm just saying.
People don't give a fuck about Games Workshop.
You'd make a good Chaos Dwarf.
I would make great Chaos Dwarf.
Yeah, we need a big hat for you. Big penis hat.
Dude, I fucking love it. I'd be a Rocketeer crewman immediately. I'd just be like, have you seen my rocket? I would bend my head. That's the thing. I would try and make my helmet like super phallic, but not overtly phallic, except when I leaned down and you saw that there was actually like the tip of a penis sculpted on top of my head.
Yes.
But so my ideal, like 7th edition didn't need to be like completely revamped. They needed to fix immune psychology in some manner. I'm not going to say what it was because that doesn't matter. Speculating on the history, who fucking cares? But they needed to fix that one rule, and then like lap round should have been relegated to a special ability because that would have left sneaky gets would be really cool. Like, holy shit, they have this cool ability that only they have.
Yeah, well, the only reason I know that they got rid of lap round was because it really slowed down the game.
Right.
Because you'd have to take your model and you'd put it just
right. Which is why it would be totally fine as a special rule one unit.
Yeah, like sneaky gets. Or all of the Dark Elf army, which they would do because they love to give Dark Elf everything.
Well, I mean, to be fair, they shit on Dark Elf super hard for really long time.
Does Games Workshop have no other game? They
have Warhammer 40,000 and they don't care about Warhammer Fantasy.
Yeah, they don't care about that. Well, actually, this is kind of funny because Steve put up something on Facebook about what would be your ideal
The
miniature's dream.
And mine, what would your miniature's dream be right now?
My miniature's dream is that every game would have the Warmaster rule system.
That's pretty ridiculous, but okay.
Yeah.
What would your miniature's dream be?
Miniature's dream, I don't
That
really...
all models evolve.
No. What would your miniature's dream be, Pat? Answer that in the best way you can.
Actually, all right, the best way that I can, because I like to watch miniatures games, and I like the historical gaming, and I like the fantasy games. I like going through when we were at Adepticon the one year. I liked watching the Warhammer, the 40K tournament. I wish that the games, I guess for me personally, this is just me, and I'll probably get shredded by some of your fine listeners.
I'm sure. No, people like you.
No, yeah. They fucking hate me.
No, people
but
like you.
But no, what I like.
Everyone should like Pat. If you don't like Pat, you're an asshole.
No, I just wish, because they seem very intimidating. It doesn't seem like a game I could just walk up and get into. I wish it was more welcoming, because those games, because they are so in depth and the rules and everything, like, and it's no different than a video game that, you know, is complicated. That
so
you,
you want
time
you want
Hero
Clicks?
Well, not necessarily Hero Clicks.
No,
but just
no, I
the
mean
game,
I wasn't shitting
games,
on him.
Some of the games don't seem welcoming to new players.
No, that's very fair. Like I find War Machine, like the thing, I like War Machine in general, like as a concept, but War Machine very much is like, if you're a new player and like, there's a lot of people who are like butthurt competitive GW guys who like play War Machine exclusively. They'll just savage you and won't tell you why, and they'll be like, "You're fucking terrible, kid. Why don't you just play a real army like Menoth?"
But like, I see a lot of figures. I see a lot
As this guy with his pants like slowly creeping down off his ass, yeah, with his arms out in a Jesus pose, is ascending to heaven playing his Menoth.
It's funny. That's what, like Joe knocks me a lot about Dark Age, but I think one of the coolest things about Dark Age is if you grab 250 points of models and I grab 250 points of models, you will probably, having never played the game before, will probably understand why you lose the game we play. Like it, that, like with War Machine, it's so combo centric, and it's like you beat people so hard with the rules in War Machine, you might not understand like how, I don't even know how I lost that game. Like I just yeah, fucking died. Like it's like, what the fuck? It's like if I took Street Fighter, put it in your hands, you've never played a single fighting game before, and I'm fucking Daigo. And like yeah, I'm like you've never yeah played a fighting game
things
in your life,
I
and
don't
I'm
understand. And
I'm, see, now it's your turn. It's yeah, not your turn, Joe. So I'm Daigo. You've never played a fighting game, and I'm like, here you go, let's play. And
isn't
we
that
play
an insurance company?
And you'll be like, that's Geico, you idiot. And that's the thing. So, but Dark Age, because the, I don't want to say like it, I find it to be pretty balanced. There's a lot of people play it, and like, it's generally quite a balanced game. Yeah. Nothing is perfectly balanced, but it's very balanced when you play it, because everything in the, there's no like invincible Uber unit in Dark Age. There's super strong shit, but like if I have a super strong unit and like I'm attacking the fuck out of your guys and you like pile on with all your shitters, you can kill him.
Yeah.
Like you can drop my guy, but you'll be like, man, that guy did a lot of fucking damage. So like you would learn immediately when you play it.
Yeah, they don't seem like friendly games to walk into. And maybe
no, I agree.
Adepticon was the wrong place to be looking for that, because I didn't even feel like I could walk up to some of those players and be like, yeah, so hey, can you explain to me like how did you?
They're like, stranger danger. Yeah,
because I love the figures, and I love all of the models, and I love all of the the maps and
you could,
everything.
You
that
could come
make
play some butt action with me, Anthers. And
don't play butt action, Pat. Yeah. Don't.
I like it. Actually,
I'll hate you forever.
I had a question when I was
I'll
at
hate
Adepticon.
You forever
watching,
if you play
I was
butt
watching
action.
Joe play some bolt action, and I said,
I believe you mean butt action.
Yeah. Well, I actually,
God damn it,
I had a question where if you were trying to go after a particular unit, but your own units were kind of in close range to those enemy units, could you do friendly fire to get at the enemy players? And I was listening to an episode of Game Classy not long ago where you actually addressed that, where you were
the 1-inch rule.
Yeah, the 1-inch rule, where you were saying, well, the guy was trying to shoot at his own fucking players to try and take me out. And you
it's
can't
called
do that.
The 1-inch rule, because everyone who plays bolt action has a 1-inch penis. Yes, I totally nailed it.
All right. All right, let's go on to some other gaming news. Guess what went up for pre-order?
Up and Out, a webcomic Kickstarter that I shared on the Facebook page, because it's amazing.
No.
Oh. Well, I mean, it is on the Kickstarter, and you should back it. If
no,
you haven't
no,
watched the video,
that's not up for pre-order.
He's got tiny little hands, and he makes a sandwich. It's amazing. Other than pre-order, there's a brand new slew of Armada miniatures for Star Wars.
No. And this is why he's on the separate mic this time.
Yeah.
As opposed, so he's going to get like, his decibels will get nuked.
Please leave that in.
Well, it'll be left in. It'll just be, your decibels will be nuked. Terminator Genesis.
I'm super stoked about that movie, actually.
Genesis. Yeah,
like,
I can't wait
you
for
can
it.
Shit on the name all you want, but like the movie looks awesome.
Yeah.
It looks fucking great.
I can't wait.
So it's like, oh, I get it. So it's like systems.
It's so fucking expensive.
Like a Gen-I systems.
Yeah, it's like Inatech.
I want you to say whatever you want to say about it. I want you to say whatever you want to say about it. I'm going. I only have one quick thing to say. I'm going to pee, and I want you to keep the podcast rolling because I want you to talk. Because I literally have one thing to say about it.
About Genesis?
About this release from Warlord.
Yeah.
I thought it would be really, really cool, and I was actually behind it in general in the total theory if it was $50. Go.
Okay. Well, Steve is going to go pee there.
$50 US.
So. You get the full color rulebook for $128 and 128 pages. You get a metal Kyle Reese figure, 10 Terminator endoskeletons, 5 Terminator crawlers.
This is a Kickstarter?
No, this is an actual game up for pre-order.
Okay.
16 Resistance soldiers, the quick start rules, card scenery and tokens, a double-sided gaming mat, and rules reference sheets with 13 color-coded dice and a fate die. I'm assuming that's like their special die for the game. Sure. It ships in early June. How much do you think it's selling for, Pat? Now, well, let me just tell you out this right there. We got 31 figures in there. And out of those 32 figures, and out of those 32 figures, 5 of them are Terminators without legs that are just crawling on the ground for some odd reason.
That's still pretty cool.
All right.
I like those Terminators.
How much do you think that is? Well, what would you think would be fair for that? As a person who's not into mini games, who's like, I'd like to buy this game. What would be your price point for it?
You know, I would say, not seeing any pictures of this and not knowing the quality.
I can show you pictures.
And not knowing the actual quality or what it looks like.
Yeah, you can't.
I would say with all that goes into it, I'd say maybe, like what Steve was saying, $50 to $75.
Okay,
I'll put it at that.
That makes sense. This game is actually retailing for $112.
What the fuck?
That is expensive as fuck.
No, you know, it doesn't surprise me because every time I hear you guys talk about miniatures and I listen to the podcast, I'm always shocked at the staggering prices of some of these things. Even fewer figures than that. You guys have talked about, you know, 40K figures.
Well, 40K exists in its own world, and the reason why they get away with spending it is because there are people who are willing to spend that money on it.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And not only that they've required you to have at least 4 to make an army, or, you know, a certain number to make an army so you can even use it in a game.
What, who are those for, Pat?
That's my special gift for Pat.
Whoa.
D&D Master.
So when are you going to finally come over and play actually some D&D? We've been wanting to play.
When we can schedule it on a night where I can actually...
Oh, please.
I can actually play.
So, Steve...
I want to play.
We revealed the price point of the Terminator Genesis.
$199 US. $199 US.
No. Oh, $199. No, it's $112, sir.
Yeah, I saw it. It's super expensive. I don't know can you pick me up? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
All right. Hopefully the mic picks me up here because I'm making my drink here. But,
Steve is actually, we're actually drinking on the podcast. This is kind of a change of pace. We don't normally drink on the podcast.
But I'm really excited about drinking on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, normally we're recording at like 10 o'clock in the morning, so if we drank that early, we'd have problems.
We'd have problems.
You mix Coke and fucking Mountain Dew.
Yeah, I mix Coke and Mountain Dew.
It looks like poop.
It does look like poop. I actually, like, out, like, intrinsic value, because they're all metal minis.
They're
all metal?
Aren't they
I don't think they're all metal, because it specifically says exclusive metal Kyle Reese figure.
I guess my opinion is variable. I assumed it was all metal because it's Warlord, and
yeah,
throw some LED.
Well,
light
you know,
in
no, no, because Warlord actually has a pretty extensive plastics range.
Well, I guess it's okay. So it's not outrageously expensive from a miniature standpoint because Games Workshop has made the price of miniatures so outrageous as a base. It's very difficult to do a comparison because it's like, well, this is a $900 Games Workshop item. You're charging me $800. What a deal!
It's a deal! Yeah,
so that's kind of rough. But, like, I don't think it's that bad. The problem I have with it is it's a boxed minis game.
Yeah.
And the games that are taking off at roughly $100 MSRP, because, like, Zombicide is $100.
Yeah, but you also get a shit ton of stuff in Zombicide.
Minus the actual... Well, I mean, the amount of minis is pretty comparable, actually.
Yeah, probably to the... And, I mean, I think there's about 40 to 50 minis in the
Because it's like you get, like, 50 or 60 zombies.
And they're all the same sculpt.
But
yeah.
You only get, like, 3 heroes.
Yeah.
Or 5 heroes. So, like, yeah, you get a lot.
You get... You get Dick Gimes. He's kind of
Dick Gimes. He's a
local deputy.
There's and totally Coral, a Rick Grimes parody.
I know. And then you got
Coral. A prostitute, Coral. No.
A streetwalker, Coral.
Zombies, Coral.
I tell you, no one has done Zombies. It's a fucking game where you have motorcycles that are wind-up toys with zombies on them. You set them down and they fucking zoom. Fucking Zombies.
That's actually a pretty brilliant toy idea. We could put that in, like, our retro toy idea.
No, that was my idea for
Dinotaurs.
No, that was my idea. Well, Dinotaurs is a toy idea. Mine is a board game idea because you do Fireball Island style for the board, where it's a injection molded plastic board that has raised ridges. Yeah. So when you put your Zombie down, they race along the plastic board. So when they hit the edges, they actually keep going.
So, you know what? I can actually hook you up with some pick and place robotics to help you. Well, you have those minis.
I don't want to deal with your robots because the thing we were on the subject of Terminator Genesis, you are
working for
literally
Cyber 9.
Miles Dyson. Yeah, you're going to end the human race.
I've actually seen a couple.
Well, not end. You're going to create Judgment Day.
Yeah, I actually just finished my first solo project, wiring and programming a robot. It was.
How do you feel about the Honda robot?
It's cool.
The Motoman
robot's pretty cool.
What about the suicide robot, the Kuma?
I've not seen that.
Oh, it's called like a. Seppu Kuma, I believe, is the name of the robot. Well, I mean, you laugh, but it's legit. And like, this is about to get pretty serious for me as far as the podcast goes. But it's called Seppu Kuma, and it is a quadrupedal robot that has wheels, and it has the face of an adorable bear. And in addition to being a nurse and health assistant bot, it's an assisted suicide robot.
Oh Jesus!
And it has. Like 30 different ways for you to have your assisted suicide.
Katana
is not one, but what? It's got lethal injection. It has strangulation. It has neck break. It has compression, which hugs you until you die.
What kind of neck break? Is it like just like a, or is it like Steven Seagal style? Like,
well, no. So like the mechanics, they grab your head and like the computer like finds your your personal body's vertebrae. And it like when its hands clamp on, once it's done, it snaps your neck. Like,
see,
immediately.
I'd program
takes very, very little effort for that robot to pull it off.
Oh,
well.
Yeah. No, the robot's very strong.
Oh, yeah.
I would you know what I'd like the robot to do? I'd like to have the robot be like program it for like assassin contract. So that way I'd never know when it's coming. Like I'd just be walking
super slow. You'd hear it. You'd hear like and you'd be like it would be like Konnichiwa Joe-san. And you'd turn, you'd be like Sepakuma.
Yeah. At last we beat again. This you for the final me. Time.
And then there's fucking speed lines, and you're like powering up, like
his power level's over 9,000.
Anyway,
but
like it's a legit like assisted suicide robot, and it has a very cute bear appearance.
Yeah, it's programmed by Pat B.
It is programmed by Pat B.
I would have nothing to do with that.
But like I actually on a personal level, I think that is a very good thing. Because I don't believe in people like being forced to stay alive in horrible pain because of medical things.
I saw five robotic articulated arms shooting craps together, and that was pretty sweet.
Shooting craps?
Yeah, they were shooting craps.
Did they blow on the craps?
Way to defuse my serious point, son of a bitch.
But it actually held the dice out and showed everybody the dice before it rolled.
Well, that's
what
you got to do that. You can't.
It was cool.
A dice always need to be seen by the dealer. As a guy who loves playing craps, I can tell you that.
Look, it's a fucking adorable suicide robot with a bear face. It's amazing.
All right. See, this is one of those ones where I'm going to have to bring Steve. Let's move back to the game stuff.
I don't want to move back to the games. I'm talking about video games and movies and anything but tabletop games, because tabletop games is the worst right now.
All
right.
So
other than Force of Will, which I'm goddamn fucking unbeatable at.
Yeah. Steve loves his Force of Will. He thinks he's a... He is...
Oh, think nothing. I've got the record to prove it.
He's the human tornado of Force of Will.
I've lost the... So I always talked about like my number one gripe about Magic, and I was like, fuck, man. Like, I always get shit on by my bad like land draws. I always get fucked or like too many land or too few land.
Green land everywhere.
No, not green land. Just land.
Oh.
Oh, my God. I've just drawn land. So the normal excuse. However... I've even played Force of Will, a game that eliminates the possibility of you getting fucked by your land. I have lost a grand total of 2 rounds since the game's come out, and I've played in a tournament every week. I have the best record of anyone I know playing Force of Will, because I body all those fucking casuals because I'm a goddamn savant.
How many people are playing it?
Oh, the last tournament was 20 players.
Hey, that's not bad.
Five rounds. I mean, I went for, I bodied. I didn't lose at all. So just saying.
Woo!
I mean, nice. Yeah, I mean, like, whatever. Like, if you can consistently, like, go through, like, if you can net positive at the end of a tournament, if it's five rounds and you go 3-2, 4-1, you did good. That's the rule of thumb, basically. So, like,
but I mean, in the end, everyone had fun playing a game.
Right. That's
no, not everyone always has fun. No. Just the winners.
The salt level is weird. Like, with card games, the salt level is, like, really weird because
you do expect to lose. Well, then, unless you're, like, a top tier player.
Right. Even then, like, I mean, I expect anyone can beat me if they, like, out tech me. That's the thing I like about Force Will is, like,
well, Gordon Schabowski, the all time Magic player winner, he never loses.
No, that's actually,
I don't know what his
name is. That's Luis Cavargas.
Whatever. What's going to happen? You know what's going to happen?
Is that Gordon Schabowski?
No. You're going to go to a tournament and some like 9-year-old kid's going to walk in there and just house you brutally.
Because Force Will has a lot of variance reduction, if he houses me, I'll be like, yeah, your strategy was better.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I like about it. It's like chess. Like, if you know chess and you lose to someone at chess, you know why you lost. Yeah, you outplayed me.
I'd like to see Steve play against a kid, little kid playing this game. However, I'd like to, when they're playing, I like to hear the voiceover, but done in the style of an 80s, like, Robotech anime or, like, Evangelion or something like that, where he's like, oh, no, this kid, his reactions are far quicker than I could ever possibly be.
His reactions are unbelievable.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
Oh, no.
He's drawn three cards in a row. I can't believe he's drawn those cards. Oh, no, he's played them. He's tapped his stones. Oh, my God, it's unbelievable. It's also, oh!
He pulls up, and he does like the Yu-Gi-Oh thing where he pulls out the card with the two fingers like, ching.
Yeah, no, he raises his hand with his two fingers extended and a card flies from the deck into his fingers. Yeah. With like a fucking rainbow light. It's like, ring! And I'm like, Nadeska, curious to the.
And he puts it down like, and it's like, and as he lays it down,
Nani!
as he lays it down, like all of his other cards get anthropomorphic eyes and just get like, that's what I see.
Yeah, that's all legit. Right. I don't know. Like, it's exciting to play a game that's like competitive but still collectible, and it's got the like.
Is it highly collectible?
It's not actually highly collectible because you can buy so few to get a complete
ooh,
set.
Ooh, can I tell my?
It's got value.
Can I tell my story?
What's the story?
About what I saw yesterday at the local game store.
This is a natural segue.
I was at the local game store yesterday playing my weekly game of Butt Action, and there was totally two. It was like a unicorn. It was like a Sasquatch in the wild. Not even.
Would you say it is a unicorn to the level of the Pit or Little Mac Amiibo?
No.
Was it a girl?
No.
Yeah, there you
thank
go.
Thank you.
Good job. Good job, Pat. Girls playing miniatures games.
Yeah. No, this was.
They're one in a thousand.
No. That's why I say this isn't necessarily a unicorn. This is more like a white rhino. Just something that once existed in plentiful numbers, but just doesn't exist anymore. I saw two guys playing Lord of the Rings. And not War of the Ring, but straight up Lord of the Rings.
I want to pause for a second. I don't actually have anything to say. I just want to go. All right, carry on.
Fly, you fools.
How fucking good is the Lord of the Rings movie series, as well as The Hobbit?
I love it.
How do you? What do you feel?
I fucking love it. I love all of it.
Handshakes. Yeah. Handshakes all around the table. Yeah. Everyone loves Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit.
Yes. These two guys. And it was the one guy sounded like he was demoing the game to another guy, hoping to get another player into Lord of the Rings. And I was just like, this is something I haven't seen since like 2004, probably.
I personally feel like that'd be a much more popular game, is it not?
Oh, you would think, but no.
Why?
Because
it's so expensive.
It's. We complain about.
Oh, wait, you know what? I have heard you guys.
We have talked about how expensive 40K in fantasy is. Lord of the Rings makes it look like street crack. You know, like you can just get a $5 hit.
No, none of that. So Games Workshop.
Crack is amazing. It's so cheap.
40K in fantasy are amiibo, and Lord of the Rings is literally heroin for price point.
That's crazy.
Not demand.
Kinda
just price point.
Kind of makes me want to sell some on the street.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, man, you want to buy some Gondorians?
Which is annoying because like I know a lot of it's because of their licensing, but I deal with licensed games because I distribute Fantasy Flight product. And Fantasy Flight has a lot of licensed games through Games Workshop, even, and Star Wars.
Yeah.
And there is only one single game that has a price adjustment for Fantasy Flight that affects the retailer's discount rate, and that's Armada. Mm-hmm. No, I'm sorry. Not Armada. Imperial Assault.
And Assault.
Assault. And I believe Imperial Assault is specifically because they use the likenesses.
Likeness rights.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, Han Solo, it looks like Harrison Ford. It's fucking Han Solo. But, like, Harrison. The Millennium Falcon.
Chewie, we're home.
Dude, I'm so fucking pissed about people talking about that trailer. God damn it. But whatever.
What?
No, BB-8 is adorable. Super good. Hang on, wait. Tell us what you think about the Star Wars trailer. As it was not a Star Wars. This is my wife, who is not a Star Wars fan.
It's her first appearance on the podcast.
It is. It's the first official sort of way. The first official appearance
after 86 episodes
of my wife after fucking infinite episodes. Who is not a particularly big Star Wars fan, and not really a super nerd at all, although we've been watching Shingeki no Soma, which together, which is sweet.
Yeah, but and she what loves Tron.
What do you think? What do you think about?
Oh boy. Comic books.
Right. What do you? What you're a huge nerd, but not anything we talk about. What do you think about the new Star Wars trailer?
The robot's cute, and there's a guy that's a no name, which is cool, and there's a chick that's a no name, so that's cool. And I don't give a shit that Harrison Ford and Chewie are in it. And there's some ship that everybody was like, oh my God, it's that ship. And I don't remember the name of it. And
it's got a square antenna.
I think there was like a crazy looking lightsaber, which was cool looking. And I was like, cool, that looks awesome. And everybody complained about it.
And by everybody complained about it, it's me and Steve.
I actually didn't complain about it. I don't give a fuck about it.
I think the lightsaber is stupid.
I think
the two trailers, every single second that comprises a part of that trailer, both of them, I thoroughly enjoy them 100%.
Here's my deal with the Star Wars trailers. People are talking so much about it, and there's like webcomics about it.
I'm constantly moving the microphone back. Because
I want to hold it.
Yeah.
There's so many people talking about it and so much shit about it. And for me, like, the biggest thing with Star Wars shows is, like, it's fucking nothing. Like, what do you know about the Star Wars prequels? There's a fucking chrome stormtrooper. There's a fucking weird-looking lightsaber. And goddamn Han Solo and Chewbacca are in it.
Yeah. You know, I talked about this on Play On once, where I kind of raged, and all I said was, I just want Star
nothing
Wars to come
known.
Back and be awesome.
Nothing
and
is
so,
known.
And so far, it looks good.
I don't want it to be.
That's a bullshit. That's bullshit because we all said that in 1999 when we all saw the preview in front of Wing Commander. The only reason we went to see that fucking movie.
No one doubted Episode 1 being great.
No, everyone thought it was amazing.
Right. No one doubted it.
No one said a single thing. But now there are a precious few of us left who are like, no. Your nostalgia is blinding you. We have to give him no quarter.
So
what do you want? Do you want more Star Wars or do you want more Fast and the Furious?
Regardless of,
what do you want?
Dude, I haven't seen any of the Fast and the Furious films, but here's the thing. The Fast and the Furious films have made more money than the prequels, so they must be better movies.
I just hate the kids who like the prequels. I hate people who like the prequels.
Well, regardless.
They're people I don't want to hang out with.
Back to the licensing thing.
Lord of the Rings.
So I know there are certain things that make the licensing more expensive, but I know the discount rates because I sell to retailers. I'm a distributor. I know what they pay. I know what I pay. And at some point, you know, I have to look at my non-disclosure agreement to find out what's what. But at some point, I want to do a cast about like how small margins are for games.
Well,
that's a side story.
But I think we get what you're saying in that. The Lord of the Rings shouldn't be marked at that high because of the licensing fee. But what it is it's not the licensing fee necessarily. It's the contract Games Workshop
That's the thing. It should be marked up a certain amount because of the licensing fee. However, when you take the amount it's marked up, because hopefully I don't get in trouble for this, but the markup for Imperial Assault specifically is 2%.
If you do, just let me know by tomorrow that I'll bleep it out for you.
2%. And I won't know, but I don't think it'll matter. But 2% is the margin. Saying no numbers, it won't matter. 2% is the margin difference for Imperial Assault versus all the other Star Wars games because of licensing fee.
Yeah. Well, no, but what I'm saying is it's not necessarily the license, it's the contract that they signed. They paid an ass ton of money for that contract.
Well,
and they re-upped that contract when they should have let it expire.
Fantasy Flight is a savvy gaming company.
Yeah.
Let's say Games Workshop is not a savvy gaming company.
That's why they paid so much.
Games Workshop is not a savvy gaming company compared to the public. They're probably quite savvy when it comes to their pocketbook regarding everything except for sales.
Yes.
To the public. So they probably negotiate some. But even if it's 3%, the margin difference is actually irrelevant. If I was an online retailer offering a certain level of discount on my Imperial Assault and my Star Wars Armada, I would still feel comfortable offering the same discount level because the difference is only 2%. So with Lord of the Rings, particularly, if it was a 3%, even a 4% difference, as Games Workshop, I would feel comfortable offering the same level of discount. So 10 Space Marines being $35, which I know they're not anymore. Please don't correct me, listeners.
They used to be like...
They used to be 25. Yeah. Right. Like, that's
for how many?
10.
10.
Well, that's fair.
Right. You got it. That's the old Games Workshop prices, when you hear
made
them...
Made sense.
When you hear them, you're like...
That's almost shocking. That's almost like that's not real.
In actuality, that's actually kind of high, too. Because there's a lot of mini games that I play where the minis go for about a buck and a quarter each.
Right, but Workshop always had the, like, we've got, like, 27 parts for models. You've got so many options. Yeah. And you're like, you're right, Games Workshop. I have a lot of options.
And you have a player base, too.
Right. So that being aside, they should feel comfortable offering the same level. So, like, Space Marines are $25 for 10, and... 10 Gondorian swordsmen are $25 for 10. Like, you accept the 2%. It's not a loss, just the 2% reduction profit.
Actually, yeah. It was 30 for 16 figures back in the day.
That's true. It
for
was.
The Gondorians.
Yeah. They had a better deal because they were static sculpts.
And they were actually put together with the elves of the First Age because they're from the box set.
Right, which is great.
Now it's, like, ridiculous. Like, now you could buy
The Hobbit box set is so expensive.
5 resin figures...
How about Smaug?
$75.
How about Smaug?
Well, yeah, but Smaug is a special figure, though. It was like a limited release.
Yeah, I guess I don't really want to shit on Smaug. Smaug was really cool.
And it was a huge model, too.
Smaug was probably $100.
Worth of resin, yeah.
Smaug was probably maybe 100 to 200, being my rage, overcosted. But Smaug as a figure, as a model and a gaming miniature niche genre model, Smaug was amazing.
Yeah.
That's an amazing figure. And, like, everyone knows I love to hate in Games Workshop, but, like, that figure, incredible.
Except you could buy a plastic model from, like, Revell that was the same size for $15.
Right.
Anyway,
that's
the issue. Moving on. I got another big gaming announcement.
Why don't we just make this a huge cast and you just split it into two?
Because
why? did we talk about my gift to Pat?
Well, that's what I'm going to talk about. Because Pat... Steve gave Pat a huge Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition little gift set here. Pretty much everything except...
It's not pretty much. It's everything.
What about...
it's everything.
Rise of the Dragon Queen.
It's there.
I don't see it.
Oh, my God. Hold on.
All right. So, yeah, he gave almost everything except that. I've been reading through... Prince of the Apocalypse, and let me tell you, Prince of the Apocalypse is awesome.
Now, how old is this?
Those are all relatively new.
Brand new?
Those are all brand new. Those are all the ones that we were reviewing and everything like that. But now, because of the way that they're doing it, we can't really do reviews because they're all based on like specific scenarios and encounters, so you can't review what's inside of it without giving away what's in the encounters. So it kind of sucks that way. Steve, where are you at? Well, get back here. You can get it after the cast. All right.
It just needs to be clear that I'm giving him everything.
All right. Okay, then it is clear. Steve is giving Pat everything.
Well, all right. I will bring it back, obviously.
I think those are yours to keep.
What? No.
Are those his to keep?
No, I will bring them back.
They're actually Pat's to keep.
What? No.
Oh, the Monster Manual, too. Yeah. All right. So, as I was saying...
They're Pat's to keep.
So...
No.
They're Pat's to keep.
What? So, Wizards announced their next expansion. Did you see what it is? Did you see what it is?
I didn't.
Rage of the Demons. Steve looks interested. Now, this first sentence is going to make or break it right here for him. Fight alongside Dritz Stewart in the new Dragon storyline on the computer.
Over. Turn it off. I'm done. Let's play Mortal Kombat.
Coming in the fall of 2015, the Demon Lords have summoned from the Abyss, and players must descend into the Underdark with the iconic hero Dritz Stewart and to stop the chaos before it threatens the surface.
I'm ready to eat more Tokyo bananas, courtesy of Angel Baker, amazing listener yes. of the planet Arbitrary family.
Yeah, the entire
although
yeah,
we have all everyone podcasts. Knows that he that I'm his favorite.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like me
and actually,
personally.
Angel, I am sure Angel's listening. I personally hand delivered all of the Japanese goodies to Steve and Nikki here to make sure that they got here.
Yeah.
So he's got them. You actually, how many you've had? You already had a Tokyo banana.
I have nothing else, but I've had a Tokyo banana. I've heard the legend of Tokyo banana.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, it lives up to the hype.
Yeah. I've got one in the freezer at home that I can't wait to tell
you. It was actually pretty. It was pretty good. I liked it.
Yeah. Having Mitsuo Market very close to here, in Arlington Heights, there's a place there called Hippo House. They're a Korean bakery, and they also make Japanese treats. They make they call it a banana omelet, even though it's got nothing to do with a banana with an omelet. It's basically a doughy thingy with a banana and whipped cream. That's kind of what the Tokyo banana is emulating.
Yeah.
And they make it super good. The Tokyo banana, it definitely holds up. Yep. So good.
I'd actually like to get a tub of Cool Whip, room temperature Cool Whip, and just take the Tokyo banana and just scoop it up and just eat it that way.
That's pretty legit.
That's how I'd like to eat it.
Pat. You were doing so good. We're doing so good. Now you've just fallen off that bandwagon.
Well, I
also think that Joe and I have talked over you this entire podcast. I don't think a lot of people are going to know you guest starred this.
Yeah.
This
episode. No. I like to listen. I like to be here and actually see the podcast happen in person because I am a Game Classy listener. I listen to every episode.
So Pat, what do you think about descending to the Underdark and fighting alongside Dritz Stewart?
I've heard you guys make fun of Dritz many, many times. And so
Kiori Salvatore.
You know what? I don't care how much I make fun of Dritz. I think this sounds amazing. I'm so excited that they're doing the Underdark for this.
That's why it makes me extra butter.
See, I hear you guys make fun of Dritz and the Poopman.
The Poopman are for beyond the gates of Antares.
Pew 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 pew. Frame. Bolter. Dan Abnett.
Poopman. Poopman.
That's an old one. That's an old one.
Bolter. Daka.
Frame. Dan Abnett.
There was an old author, not an old author. He still writes for most of the books for GW. Dan Abnett. And, like, every one of his books were exactly the same, where it was just, like, bolter, daka, you know, for the emperor, and Dan
I believe you meant for the emperor.
For the emperor.
Actually, the Dan first time you guys, I think, ever said the Beyond the Gates of Antares song, I sang that while I was at work one day. Just to myself.
At the car wash?
Just to myself as I was walking around, and I said it, and my supervisor then, when I was there, he's like, what is that? And I was like, I don't know. It's just this thing. I don't even know.
I had a great conversation with someone about Beyond the Gates of Antares, about why that game will never take off.
That new like we had and the guy who messaged us on Facebook.
Yeah.
My heart melted. My boner aroused.
Yeah.
And I was very glad that I told him we were very appreciative of his support. And it's actually butt action.
It's pronounced butt action. We got a lot of fans of butt action on the that like the podcast.
We also got a lot of people. We actually generated a lot of fans from our clickbait headline.
I know, that's what I'm excited about. I'm like, you know what? Even if we have like 1,000 people who hated it, if we got like 10 more people who are like, I like this, that's all that matters in this world.
Pat, what do you think? What do you think we could help with our clickbait headline?
I'm porn.
It can't be porn because YouTube doesn't allow porn.
Yeah, they don't allow that.
Boobies. Oh, you could dress around that.
Yeah. We could do boobies.
Sexy anime chicks always work.
Dude, all right. So thumbnail, anime boobs, make the topic about amiibo.
Yeah, there you go. That's all you need.
Straight
amiibo.
Up.
I'm never doing it. Since I'm the one who has to put everything on YouTube, I will not do that.
But it's free views.
I don't.
What? That's the thing. You,
doesn't, wouldn't they take
your
it off?
Hate,
the,
you shitting
they take
on amiibo?
It off because it's about jizz statues?
Like, you shitting
They're
on amiibo?
They're not jizz statues.
Well, I think that like Joe shitting on amiibo is so disingenuous because Joe has a gigantic confrontation collection. Which does nothing but sit in his closet.
He's seen. It's not a closet, dude. It's like he's seen my office.
Yeah, I've seen. Okay. I've seen. Joe's
and it
just room.
It does nothing but it sits there. And it's actually out of date. So for to compare it to Amiibo, that would mean that Joe is essentially collecting a product that was made for the GameCube, only the GameCube,
and is compatible wrong with that.
Compatible with nothing else.
But see, Joe has this massive collection of figures that I don't think he uses every single day. But walks amongst my collection, which I tend to play a lot of stuff all the time, and Joe will walk into my gaming area, into the game loft, into my collection and say, "Where do you have all this? You don't even play any of it."
Right. But that's the thing. That's what I'm saying. That's why I want to explain it super hard. It's like someone who's collecting something from the GameCube
era. You've done that like with every topic. You're like, "I'm going to explain this super hard tonight."
And never uses
this. This is why we don't record when Steve is drinking.
Right. Well, no,
he becomes the armchair philosopher.
Well, no, it's not a philosopher. It's like, I feel that you
Danny,
have a,
don't hit me!
You have a lot of flaccid dick arguments that you try to bring, and like I'm not impressed because they're not veiny, they're not erect.
No, they're not. They're,
it's like
they're not meaty.
It might be meaty. It might be girthy, but it's still flaccid.
Oh, it's girthy.
Right. Sure. Like that. Like I'm like, wow.
It's not flaccid.
I'm like,
I'm gonna bring back a word that I used
like
last.
It's like a half trap. It's a half Rolo.
No, I'm gonna use a word I used last podcast. It's turgid.
It's turgid, but it's not fully erect. And I'm like, your turgid argument is not what I want to see.
Well, actually, turgid means fully erect.
Is it really? Oh, yeah. Well, I gotta throw that out there then. I'm throwing it out.
What's Neverwinter? Do you know what Neverwinter is?
Fucking shitty ass fucking campaign setting of Forgotten Realms.
No, but bullshit. I mean, it says it's an MMORPG.
Oh yeah, there's an MMO called Neverwinter.
Is it like
The D&D 4th edition RPG?
Is it like WoW?
No, it's a weird. It's the 4th edition RPG. So it's kind of action, kind of turn-based.
But it's like it's a video game though.
Yeah, it's an MMO.
Okay.
But it has a dodge button.
There's a dodge button. I like how you're like, "But it has a dodge button."
Well, that matters. Well, anyone who's played an MMO before will know that actually is a thing.
Hey, is the Princes of the Apocalypse box set worth getting? The board game?
If you liked the Castle Ravenloft, Wrath of Ashardalon,
or
the Legend of Drizzt, you'd like it.
What about the minis, though?
They're good.
They're good?
Well, it's WizKids.
Well, how much is...
It's
how much...
WizKids, and it's not fully painted. And I've frequently said, WizKids on average has better sculpts than Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah.
But their paint jobs are worse. So
it's because they
explain
don't
explain that however you want. Because
they don't pay little kids in Sri Lanka to paint their figures.
Dude, that's
they're probably in somewhere else like Uzbekistan.
That slave labor painting dough.
Yeah, it's they're painted with the tears of small children.
That was something I did not know
about. I always
thought
turgid was kind of hard.
No,
not
turgid
fully.
Is like erect.
Really fully?
Yeah. Hmm.
Because I want to like.
You want to believe everyone paints their own stuff.
Well, and when I found out about that you could actually send your figures overseas and have it painted, I always just kind of picture like someone going in to rescue kids and
then
bursting in and seeing them all painting
straight up
minis and being like,
I expect to see it like Temple of Doom, where it's like Kalima. It's like this big guy's like whipping these little kids.
Out of his chest. Rob Hawkins pooped in Joe's cereal, in my opinion.
What?
With his last blog post.
Oh, because about his...
Because he had the Skaven that looked fucking great with a colored spray.
They looked fine.
Colored spray, dry brush, wash.
I don't see what the problem with it is.
Which is my preferred method. I love, for batch painting, the big units.
Yeah.
Colored spray, dry brush, wash.
If I'm doing it on my own, I could paint 30 guys in about a week. So I have no problems.
So there's like a weird level of like what's acceptable and what's not.
Oh, it's perfectly acceptable. I'm just saying that I wouldn't put my models anywhere near dip for the life of me.
Well, he didn't dip them. He just was no actual dip.
Yeah.
Like dipping is like when I think dip, I think you are applying a wash to the entirety of the model.
You like blunk,
right?
And then you flick it off.
Right.
And then you're
done. When I think dip, whenever I reference dip, I'm talking old school. Like even if it's not Minwax, when I talk dip, I'm talking you have a cup, jar, whatever of your dip. You take your miniature, you put it in there, you shake off the excess, you set it down.
Look,
to dry.
There's it's your hobby. Do what you want with it. But as I say, with my own stuff, and if I had to make a recommendation to someone, I'd be like, no.
But I think his stuff looked great.
It looks good.
Does he have a Hello Kitty army?
No. It is not. And fuck you for saying so. I'm taking these D&D books back.
All right. Do I have anything else I need to talk about for today? Gaming-wise, do you do anything?
I mean, I've been doing, like, gaming wise, it's been Force of Will 24/7 plus like Dark Age. So
that's like your YouTube handle. It's like Force of Will 24/7
and Dark Age.
And Dark Age.
like it's things that you don't like, so I don't really care.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. I do.
The only thing you like that I vehemently hate is butt action. I fucking hate it. But you know what? I want to take a moment. I want to take a soft moment.
This is why we don't drink.
I want to take a soft moment, dude, bro.
Yes.
Bro.
What?
Why do you get to shit my feelings?
Okay, go ahead.
I want to take a moment. I want to say that Joe and I, we have many disagreements. We don't agree on pretty much anything, but War Master.
War Master's a great game.
We have a spiritual bond
over War Master.
Over War Master.
It's the greatest rule.
The fucking best rules.
Greatest mass combat war rule set that exists.
Absolutely.
And also, we both really like Star Trek.
That's true. Well, I mean, I was talking in terms of the hobby.
In terms of the hobby.
Yeah, we actually jive pretty well on things that aren't the hobby. Right. But on the hobby, we disagree on many things in the gaming hobby.
Yeah.
Except for War Master.
You guys both wear glasses, so you got
that. Yeah, we got that in common.
I was specifically referring to the hobby. Joe and I have a lot of things in common if you take the hobby out of it. we have the most disagreements about the hobby. So it's nice to be like, when I'm like, man, War Master is super good. Like, I wish more people played it. I know Joe's like me too.
I texted Steve not too long ago. It's like, I have all these fucking armies at home, all this shit to do, all these games to play, and all I could think about is War Master.
And I texted back and I was like, so just do War Master. I was like, sell that shit, make more War Master.
If unlike most people, I have probably the largest collection of War Master that, like, in private hands.
You've got a lot. Well,
no. I have. So when there
you?
Was
I mean, I know you have a lot, but I thought you had a lot on limited armies.
No, every army I have everything.
Really? I'm not trying to challenge what you have. I thought you had a lot of orcs, chaos, and the super expensive and very rare Empire spinoff, the Polish
Kislev,
guys.
The Kislev.
Kislev. Yeah.
I don't have a ton of the Kislev stuff, but what
they're the rarest. I'm glad you have any, because they're super ridiculous.
No, but this, okay, so
they're all Ness amiibos.
I have this uncanny ability to know that the moment a game is about to just, like, disappear into the ether, I have the ability to find out that exact moment when you could buy the minis at their absolute cheapest. And then I just hoard it. Now, a smart person would take that and then be able to sell it when it's at peak.
For max profit.
But I don't do that because I'm just like, no, all for Joe.
All for Silas.
Yeah. I make a big pile of it and I just roll around in it. But yeah, I have so much. I probably have, for War Master and Confrontation, I probably have the largest private collection of those figures.
Dude, really? Painting Buddha has got you destroyed on Confrontation.
Maybe.
That Painting Buddha auction is ridiculous.
Yeah, if you go to Painting Buddha, they got an auction going up on
tomorrow.
Saturday.
Yeah, tomorrow.
This will go up on Sunday. So you'll
The 7th? So Saturday the 8th? Or the 9th? What's
the
day?
No, it's the 9th.
Saturday the 9th.
But this
kind of sucks.
If this goes up on Sunday morning, you might be able to catch the last half.
Well, I
of
linked
it
on the Facebook. Yeah. Hopefully everyone gets a shot at it, because their collection is fucking impressive. And I know Joe has a lot of Confrontation.
But you know what, Steve? I have multiples of everything.
I know. But like you, that I was hoping they had some. Like, I want 10 mil, but the thing is, like, I want 10 mil at a deal, so like it's not gonna happen.
Nah, there's actually a couple armies, a couple places that have done good successor armies to War Master. Magister Militium, I think.
Heresy did one, I think.
Yeah. Cobblestone Casting has.
Oh, Cobblestone. That's one. Not Heresy. Cobblestone. They did a great job with their orcs.
They have a really great, like, 10 millimeter. Like, it's all Lord of the Rings based.
Yeah. Their orcs are fantastic. Yeah. Their orcs are really good.
There's a couple ones that do some really good. There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Like
I love 10 mil. I think 10 mil, I think, is the most criminally underrepresented scale. Because I think
what is the God's given scale?
28. Okay. 28. And I'll even admit it. 28.
28 is GGS. God's given scale.
I think 10 mil is the jam.
Well, you got the way that scale works is you got the 28 is basically platoon level game, skirmish and platoon level.
Yeah.
So like that's
it's technically 25, but Games Workshop made 25 into 28 millimeter.
That was it.
They called it 25 heroic. So that was 28 mil became the standard.
Yeah, well, that was I don't think it was actually Games Workshop that called it 28. I think it was
Games Workshop never called it that. They called it heroic.
Yeah,
25.
No, but
mil.
What I'm saying is, I think it was Reaper and all those other guys mm-hmm. who were doing.
Well, no, Reaper's well, Dark Heaven's 32 mil.
Well, okay, so getting to the little bit of the history of it, when originally miniatures were always based off historical models, and those were always 25s.
Right.
But then when amateurs started doing this stuff for fantasy based stuff.
It was too big.
It was big because they were all amateur sculptors and they did stuff that was out of proportion. So that's where you get
easier to sculpt bigger, obviously.
That's where you got the heroic 25s or 28s, and that's where that comes from. Now because of CAD sculpting and computer based sculpting, Jesus Christ, this is as a seriously why we don't. I don't know what the hell he's doing.
I gotta pee.
Oh, so the reason, you know, where was I going with it? Oh, now with CAD-based and computer-based sculpting, stuff has gotten bigger and better sculptors, so that's where you get 32 millimeters. So they're a lot bigger, and they're just getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
But what made people latch on to 28 as that sweet spot?
Because that's what you see most historical games at. Like, people who would play... Well, I shouldn't say that...
Was it just personal preference, or was it everybody, we're all agreeing upon 28?
Well, a lot of people like the toy soldier size, which is a little bit bigger. That's like that 32 almost to 54 millimeter size. Mm-hmm. But it's actually cheaper, and you could get more out of the 28. So I think that's why a lot more people did that size. It really didn't standardize to like the late and second half of the decade, second half of the last century. Mm-hmm. That's when it started standardizing in size. Because you go before then, stuff's all over the place. There's no like real standardized sizes. But 28 is like skirmish to platoon level, and then you have 15, which is like the next, which I think is company or battalion, mm-hmm. and then you get, you know, the 10, which is like the whole friggin' army you could do in 10 millimeter. That's like the Napoleonic stuff. Like I always say, like if I ever did Napoleonics, which is the death of wargaming, that's mm-hmm. where Napoleonics where wargamers go to die. It's like you get so bored with it, and then you're just like, this is my French army on the Peninsular campaign. Well, they can't play against my German Prussians because they only took part in the Waterloo campaign. You know, it's like you get that argument going on there. But if I ever did a Napoleonic army, it would be in 10 millimeter because I'd want that massive fucking army with thousands of cannons and thousands of troops.
So it goes that way with standard historical wargaming as opposed to fantasy wargaming. The sizes can fluctuate. You can have 10, which is preferred in the historical or in the Napoleonic.
Well, not even, but no. 25 to 28 is always the preferable size. 15 has taken over historical gaming a lot because that's what Flames of War is.
Okay.
Flames of War is 15.
What's so funny? I had to pee.
So one game can drive the size of miniatures across multiple games.
Yeah, but me and Pat are talking. No.
Right, so you don't pause.
Yeah, 15 millimeter kind of was taken over by Flames of War, and Flames of War took over the historical market completely for years. Years it was the only historical game anyone played, and that's all 15 mil. It's fine.
And why did people latch on to Flames of War like that?
I think it was a niche that needed to be.
Is there any competition at all, or is there just kind of one main game that comes out and everyone's like, well, this is what's available, so this is what we're gonna play?
I think for like a specific period or like a specific genre. Okay, like, that's what you generally see. Like, that's why 40K dominates science fiction so much, is because it is the one science fiction game that's kind of like the focal point.
Right. Because for me, being an outsider to miniature gaming and to wargaming, I enjoy watching it, and I find it very, very interesting. But I don't see a lot of other competitors. I see a lot of individual games that are very, very big, and that's what everyone latches on to. But you don't hear a lot. Well, I guess with the Kickstarters and some of the smaller
games.
When
you're inside the game, like what Steve and I do, or like what most of the listeners do, you see everything. But it's like fantasy. And for science fiction, it's the tentpole is 40K. Everyone is attracted to that tentpole. And then you start seeing, like, this game sucks. I want to find something that's better. And so they end up, like, you find a game like that. But that's why, like, Flames of War was, like, people wanted to play World War II games. It was the first real big World War II game that came out.
You said Flames of War, right?
Yeah, Flames of War. Very good. So people latched onto that because they were like, I fucking love tanks. I love, you know, I love the World War II era. There's no other games for it. I'm going to play this. It's 15 mil. That's what everyone just played. And that's why 15 mil took over. All historical started going to 15 mil after that as well. I mean, all the Osprey books were all 15 mil based.
For sure.
Yeah, and even Napoleonics went 15 mil for a while, and those are, as I say, are usually you want to see either the 10 or the big ones. But
the,
a lot of people
the 35, do 36.
No, 28s. You sometimes see the 54 mil, but
the 50, that's the one.
The people who do the 54 mil are fucking crazy. That's
they
like,
have so many models, and they're so big.
That's like Grand Moff Tarkin. What's his face? Alan Cushing. Peter Cushing.
Peter Cushing.
He painted his figures.
Peter Cushing and the guy who was skinny and then was fat, Orson Welles.
Orson Welles was
Orson
also.
Welles did it. Yeah. I don't know why I remembered him as the guy who was skinny and then fat, but sure, whatever.
Christopher Lee has a great thing where he talks about Peter Cushing's miniature collection.
Christopher Lee is one of the weirdest things, like when he talks about Peter Cushing, is one of the weird things that like makes me feel emotion for someone I know nothing about and someone I don't know personally, where I'm just like, man, they were really good friends. And Peter Cushing died really early. And Christopher Lee's been alive for like 40 years past Peter Cushing. And they were like that. Like super close. Like, so imagine your best friend dying, you outliving your best friend for like 40 years, and people in most interviews asking you about your best friend. That's what it seems to me.
He's always like, Peter would show me his figures. And or his little toy men. He said he had rooms of them. Like, he was like obsessive about it.
Yeah.
And Peter they were Cushing. Big. They were like this big.
The best is there's some old pictures of Peter Cushing playing Little Wars.
Yeah.
Like measuring his shit out like on the floor of like a fucking like ballroom or some shit.
Now there's a manual dexterity game for you, because Little Wars was based off like all the cannon shots in Little Wars was actually based off shooting a cannon.
That's true.
Yeah. Little Wars was the first miniature rule set ever created.
The problem with miniatures games is there's a weird dichotomy of like wanting to be competitive versus the game, and like because the hobby is so much of the game, like, and not in terms of like what you score or competitive level, just like so much of that game is tied up in assembling, painting, doing models versus playing. There's this weird like competitiveness level where people are just like not comfortable with each other when they play at the table. Like when you play a Warhammer Fantasy tournament, you're playing against someone who probably looks at the game you're playing
is life
in a completely different manner.
Mm-hmm. Warhammer is love. Warhammer is life.
Not even in the Shrek is love, Shrek is life level. Just like they look at it like when they look at Warhammer Fantasy is purple. When you look at Warhammer Fantasy is red. Period. Like, so you trying to describe the game to each other, you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? It's red. And they're like, you're an idiot. It's purple.
Yes.
So, like, that's the problem with miniatures games and why, like, I like the concept of Mage Knight and Heroclix, because they give you, like, no, both of you shut the fuck up. The game is actually mauve. Like, here's the mauve game that you're both wrong about.
The problem is that they just don't balance their shit.
Right. Yeah. All the miniatures games have that issue. With the exception of miniatures games, and I'll throw Dark Age in this too, miniatures games that aren't popular are consistently, when I actually like get into them and read the rules and stuff, consistently I have found that miniatures games that are not popular or did not catch on are always more balanced than the games that do catch on.
It's kind of true too.
Like, explain that however you want, but like I found like Warmaster is one of the most, like Warmaster has its flaws.
Like that's what we talk about. Like Warmaster, in terms of just the way that everything's stat-lined, the way that everything, the way you compose your lists, the way that everything, like, every action is just perfect.
Yep.
It's exactly what you want out of a game. The differences between the armies are so slight that every army, this feels different, but it's in reality not that different. Like, an Empire army is very similar to a Dwarf army. Just with slight differences that makes it, you make it feel like, this is fun.
If you're scoring the game, Warmaster, as far as difference level between the factions, it actually scores gameplay wise. Like the difference is a factor of 1 out of 10. When you're playing Warhammer, the difference is like a 7 out of 10. So like that's the level you're at. So
yeah,
it's kind of, and like, so Warmaster, Dark Age, it's not Warmaster. It's the one that uses the hex tiles. It's Warmaster scale.
Battlelore?
Well, Battlelore's like a board minis game. It's not Battlelore.
Demon World?
It's not Demon World. It's the one that's made by the guys who make the 3D Warmaster train that comes in the hexes. Callistria?
Yeah.
It's their game.
That might be Demon World. That's I don't know off the top of my head.
Callistria's game is kind
Dwarf
of the same.
Force? Is it Dwarf Force?
It's not Dwarf Force. Callistria's game is very balanced.
We're bringing out some obscure ones.
Cronopia.
I
find it kind of weird, like, because I'm a person who really likes the rules of a game, and not necessarily.
What's Reaper's one? The one with the purple
Warlord?
Pick? Warlord. Yes. Play some Warlord.
That's 28 mil. Their rule set's terrible.
Oh, it's the worst.
It's awful. It's worse than. Than Fantasy. But like that.
I don't know if it's worse than Dust Dust Warfare. That rule set's terrible.
Too pretty.
The thing is, I haven't talked about Dust for a long, long time
because they killed it.
Yeah, they shit on it.
They shit on it.
They took Dust. They took the thing that was Dust. That could have been good. They split it in half. They ate half. They took the other half and shoved up their asshole, waited for the half they ate to meet the half they shoved up their ass to become like a poop nugget, and they pooped it out.
Yeah, they literally... What really happened was that...
Palo Parente.
Yeah. They created this game. It was really good. That's Dust Tactics. They were like, hey, let's do it without the board. And everyone was like,
And they don't know about this, guys. I think it's a golem. I don't think it's a goblin. I think it's a golem.
And the thing is that... Dust is, first of all, it's 1/35th scale, which is very, very rare in minigames because that's based off of model making. All models are either in 1/72nd or 1/35th scale. 1/35th is real big.
Except for Gundams. Gundams are 1 and 1/44.
Oh, Jesus. Well, 1/44 is a different scale.
It's only for standard grade. There's also master grade and perfect grade. And if you go up grades, they go up scale.
I actually looked at all the Gundam displays at CTV2.
They're fucking sick. They're
actually
so
pretty
good.
Fucking cool.
Anyway, it was 1/35 scale, so it's not compatible with any other mini game, which makes it like that's first of all warning sign. Klaxons. Whoop 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 whoop.
You can use nothing but these models.
Well, you can go out to and buy some like fucking Italieri like 1/35 scale models.
That's true.
Which is kind of nice. Okay, but that does throw up a big warning sign to a lot of because all your terrain too is all out of scale then. So you're like, okay.
These big giant guys and itty
little trees. Yeah, itty little trees. So you're like, okay. And then they put out the rule set for Dust Warfare. And it was just shit. It was just a shit rule set.
Do you remember how excited...
I was excited about that rule set.
I want to pause for a second. Do you remember how excited you and I both were when Dust Tactics was brand new from Fantasy Flight?
It was a great fucking game.
When it was just the board game boxed?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Dude,
And it was a good game.
It was so fun. I was like, man, this is awesome. Like, Joe and I, not this Joe, another Joe. I know 17 Joes, probably more. Not exaggerating. We played constantly, and he was like, dude, the fucking flamethrower guys are broken. And I'm like, well, you play the fucking allies. And then, like, we played it a bunch of times where we're like, the fucking laser guys for the Nazis are broken, and the flamethrower guys for the allies are broken.
But that's what
both armies are broken. High five.
It was like a balance broken. If like one thing is bad and the other thing is bad in the other army, it's okay that they both have something that's bad.
Right.
So that's fine.
It's the perfect level of balance. Your army is just as broken as mine in the same level in a different way.
Yeah. So I mean,
perfection.
It was a good game, and then it just like the Dust Warfare rules came out and they were shit, and they kept putting shit out for it. And you're just like, no, go back to tactics, scrap warfare, doesn't work.
Fix your rules first. Yeah. Fix your rules first, motherfuckers.
And then they were like, okay. But then they got into trouble with their original distributor, which was Fantasy Flight. I don't know basically what had happened with it, but I think Fantasy Flight knew something was wrong, and they bailed. Because then they were picked up by Battlefront, which is the guys who do Flames of War.
They make Flames of War.
Yeah. So Flames of War, they don't own it. They just distribute it. And then they did a Kickstarter. Palo Parente and Dust Studios did a Kickstarter for their Desert Warfare. It was Operation Babylon, Dutch Africa Corps, Deutsche Africa Corps, you know, all that shit. And all of a sudden, stuff stopped being, like, they ran out of money for it. Like, they got all these pledges in, and then they ran out of money for it. We talked about that. And
that's the thing. They didn't run out of money for it. They had the amount of money they were supposed to have, and suddenly half of it disappeared.
And so now there's this big.
Like, hey Pat, can I borrow $5,000? Sorry, I can only pack $200. $200 is all you actually gave me. Here's the $200 you gave me.
Yeah, that's what it's more like. It's like, hey, can I borrow $5,000? Sure. Here's your $25,000 back. But I gave you $5,000. No, you didn't. No, I specifically. No,
you gave me $25.
No, there's a whole.
I fucking guarantee it.
There's a website that says that I got $5,000.
But it's like when you say that the world, that the rule system was broken, do they not play test these games? I mean, I deal like in the video game world.
Well, here's
things get beta tested.
I can actually solve it because I actually know a lot about the playtesting of tabletop stuff. Here's the problem: when a video game is play tested, there's a very, very large number of people who do it.
Right.
When other games are playtested, there's a much smaller, like much, much, much smaller group. Wizards of the Coast, who make Magic, they have the largest playtest group. I'm confident to say they have the largest playtest group of any tabletop game ever. And we're talking like maximum at any time, 48 people at the like top tier.
Yeah.
And they're, with a bullet, highest number people playtesting tabletop games. So like Workshop, who claim they playtest, and people always
say they used to, but they don't anymore.
I think they still do, but they just do it with four people.
Yeah. Well, and that's the problem with a lot of playtesting is that, okay, so like let's say me and Steve make a game. But who are we going to get to playtest the game?
Our four friends.
Our friends. Yeah. And our friends have a very locked way of playing games.
But like Games Workshop is a massive corporate entity. Wouldn't they have a division dedicated to this?
Nope.
They have their heads. They have their heads up their asses.
What are they doing?
Like throw Workshop out the window. None of the tabletop companies
what I'm saying is that you would still just get your friends to playtest it. People that you know. So for example, Bolt Action. The reason why Bolt Action, so many things in there are so poorly mismanaged, like machine guns are just awful in it, because the people who playtested that game are all historical gamers. So they're like, of course I'm going to take light machine guns. All units had light machine guns in World War II.
Right.
So it doesn't matter how many points they are. The unit has to have it. And then it gets to America where you get a power gamer, or like, I wouldn't say myself, but you get someone like me who's like, I look at the point cost and I'm like,
Joe.
What?
We all know you are not particularly a power gamer in general.
Yeah.
Flames of War, you're a fucking cheesy.
Butt action.
You're a cheesy git.
Okay, so you get a cheesy git like me, and I look at it and I go, "This
you could totally do it with seven rocket launchers." Yeah.
I'm like, "This doesn't make any sense. Why would I take this?" And then everyone gets mad at me when I go on the forum and say, like, "This doesn't make any sense. Why would I take this?" And they're like, "But every unit had it in World War II." Right. And it's like, but that doesn't mean I have to take it in this game, because this is a fucking board game and not World War II.
And this comes back to, like, there's dual points here. One, so Warmaster is the perfect – Warmaster, again, perfect counterpoint to that. Warmaster, the unit is this. Like, if you're taking it, this is what you get.
Yeah, you know, there's no –
Right, so to make it a butt action term...
Sometimes you could give magical items if you give it to someone.
But that's a huge points investment.
Yeah, that's a point investment. Yeah.
Right, it's a big deal if you do that. You're like, I'm deciding to make that.
And you can only take, like, one.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a huge deal. But so to put it into butt action terms, you're like, this unit of Marines has a flamethrower. Fucking period. If you want Marines, they have a flamethrower. You can't go without the flamethrower. You can't go with anything different than the flamethrower. Ooh, wow. That's what the fuck they have. So, like, that's a huge balance thing that the Warmaster has. And people always talk about, I really like the customization, which is...
And this is Steve's point of optimal customization. Every unit will always go to optimal customization.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. Like, it's bullshit. Like, there's no actual customization. You're going to pick the best choice. If submachine guns are the best, your customized units all have submachine guns. So just cut out the fucking middleman and have the unit have something. And then to further drill in the balance perspective from an in-house development thing, Wizards of the Coast has their 48-person future league that tests the future cards, and they're all competitive gamers who have won Magic Pro Tours or have soared on the Magic competitive scene, so they've all made money playing Magic. Mm-hmm. So they're very good, because Magic is a game where the actual best player in the world, the top untouchable player, has a 75% win ratio. So think
Gordon
about
Schabowski?
That. Not even that. It's not who it is.
I'm making up this Gordon Schabowski as the greatest Magic player.
It's
of
not
all
who
time.
It's
Gordy?
Not,
you're talking about Gordy Schabowski?
I'm talking about Gordy. But it's not about the fact that it's Gordy. It's about the fact that he has a 25% loss ratio because of variance, which in terms of many games, that's unheard of. Like, that's a huge gap. So So most of them are drawn from competitive stock, like people who know the goddamn game.
Well, as long as
well,
we,
right. Yeah, and, I just understand but, if, but there's, they, if there's such but, a competitive but scene they these
miss,
games,
but they still miss things.
Well,
that's just the 40 yeah. in them.
Well, that, first of all, Games Workshop has fully admitted that they don't want to be a competitive.
Yeah,
game.
They
don't
bring,
want they don't want it. They don't want tournaments.
They grab six people.
And they should just patch the games later and release DLC content.
Yeah,
Games Workshop. Sure. But you know what?
If I games saw are, I saw a really great. Image macro on a
is it the burger?
No. It was about Warhammer, and it was basically the scene from Pacific Rim where he's like, at first they were coming 6 months apart, and it was like at first the codices came 6 months apart, then they came at 3 months apart. Now they're coming two at a time per month. Before we know it, they'll be four, five at a time, and then it'll all be over.
that's the thing that's super annoying because like you could. If I were like, it's a weird kind of level, but if I wanted to score a workshop tournament by the book, like what is available versus what is given to me as options, I would score a workshop tournament based on fun and painting and
the band
this,
fun,
like every, well, that's the thing. Everything
nah,
I normally,
nah.
It's too soon. They broke up.
Did they?
Yeah.
They weren't fun anyway.
Well, yeah, they sucked. Everything I shit on in the workshop tournament scoring system, like painting, army comp, sportsmanship, all of the stuff that I think is the worst thing about their scoring in tournaments, if I wanted to make workshop as it is, adjusting nothing with no comp, a competitive game, I would only score it on the things I shit on. Mm. Because it's so imbalanced in general. What can you score it on? How cool did your opponents? And it wouldn't even be pain, it wouldn't even be skill, because most people, I find a lot of people don't know how to judge
theme
skill.
Armies.
Well, like I don't want to say names, but I'll say Mr. A and Mr. BH. I'll use that. You probably don't even know who I'm talking about, but Mr. A produced armies that were very adequate, and he made armies for the bunker. They looked very good. They like, I can't shit on it. And Mr. BH had like two armies that he had ever done, and they looked super amazing. But Mr. A had more consistency, and Mr. BH had a little less. So Mr. A scored higher in paint, whereas Mr. BH had a much higher skill cap of what he was doing. So if you're going to go in the like the soft scores for your tournament to matter, why have game score? Like, why bother making it about the game? Just, like, ignore the game. How much fun did you have? Did you have a 4 out of 10 fun, or did you have a 10 out of 10
fun? It depends. Am I going to be in a tournament where they're going to be like, well, in this round, the cat comes out of the board, and whoever can capture the cat this turn gets 3,000 bonus points.
I was talking to someone about it at Adepticon. It blew my fucking mind. I think it was you, actually.
Yeah, it was the Bold
Action tournament. We're like, there were 10 tables and they weren't all playing the same scenario. Like, that's like you show up to a Magic tournament that is billed as the standard format. This won't mean anything to either of you, but I'm going to throw it out anyway.
No.
You show up to a Magic, how can I, there's no way I can connect both of you.
Yeah.
No. But
we gotta wrap this up, Steve.
You show up to a Magic tournament that's the standard
format. I've
already
given you an extra half hour on your podium.
Dude, everyone loves it. You can show up to a Magic tournament that's the standard format. And you showed up with Legacy, and I showed up with Vintage. And they're like, well, this round, we're going to use Legacy. So you do really good, and I don't, because I'm playing Vintage. And they're like, oh, Standard's this next round, so Joe does really good. And then I go, like, oh, final round's Vintage, so both you get shit on. And I do great, because I brought the Vintage deck. So, like, yeah, it's just like, I don't know, it's weird.
Yeah.
I
get it.
Back Up and Out Kickstarter. Up and Out, the webcomic Kickstarter. He's our bae. He's our bae. There's three Twitter bays I have. I have AC Stewart, which is Noob the Loser. He's my bae. I have Shenaniganson, who is the Altered webcomic. He's
Yay!
My he's my bae. And I have the new guy. Up and Out. I can't remember his name. Up and Out Kickstarter. I backed his book. I really want it to happen. Up and Out. Happened. He's the dude who did the comic I shared like a little while back of the guy who has the Cloak of Wisdom, and he's like,
oh, yeah.
I don't need to cheat. I don't need to study for this test. I have the Cloak of Wisdom. And then like three panels later, he puts the cloak on. It's like plus 15 Wisdom. And he's like, oh my fucking God, I should have studied.
Well, that's the importance of the difference between
Jeremy. I think his name's Jeremy. I don't know. I'm
It illustrates the important difference between intelligence and wisdom.
It's that comic works on so many levels. But number one,
because you see, in Dungeons and Dragons, wisdom and intelligence are two very different things.
Which Pat will learn by my collection of the entirety of 5th edition.
I'm going to learn how to run a business.
But like his webcomic's the best. He's great. His Kickstarter video is the funniest thing I've ever seen. His Kickstarter video is the best Kickstarter video I've ever seen. It's just him, and I think he has a person behind him with wearing clothes. I don't know how to do it, but they have tiny little hands, and they're making a sandwich while he's talking, and then they feed him the sandwich. It's so good. Up and out. Please back it. I backed it. I backed it at $50. I told him to make my name Dick Champion, care of Game Class.
Dick Turgid.
No, Dick Champion.
I know. A Kickstarter that actually popped up on my feed that I was really impressed with was War Quest by Mr. B Games. Mm. Actually, really cool. They keep on building it as the giant map game. Apparently, the map is like 5 feet by 5 feet. For it. It's got a ton of little figures for it. They're just releasing, they just previewed the Bugbear expansion. Mm. And it compares
Bugbear.
10 Bugbear armored, 10 Bugbear crossbow, and lots of fun stuff there. Wizards and stuff. It's kind of neat. Just take a look at it. It's a little on the expensive side. It's $125.
What's the satchel you brought?
In here?
Yeah, what's that?
I was gonna go over that real quick. Right, but you were on your little podium.
Sorry.
I was trying to
involve Pat in it, but Pat didn't.
No, this is just
Pat didn't make out with me as much as I wanted on this podcast.
No.
You know what? I'm kind of okay with that because Pat still has a mustache. He didn't shave.
It's a lot of information to take in.
Yeah.
Because I am such an outsider.
I went to Half Price Books.
You won't be soon.
And of course, I found one of the modules that I've been looking for a while. And they have the giant sticker right on the fucking cover. Mm. But it's of course Dragonlance.
I love and I fucking hate Half Price Books. I love them that they take old product like this, and I can't stand that they don't bag it and stick their fucking sticker on a bag.
Well, and this is the best
like,
part.
What the fuck?
They had this bag just sitting there.
Don't tell me it was bagged with the sticker on the actual book.
No. Well, that was not bagged with the, that.
Okay.
That was separate.
Okay. I feel a little bit better.
They had this little plastic bag here, and I was looking inside of it. And it was like buried behind a lot of the other stuff. It was a bag full of just random D&D stuff. Look at this. Look at all these maps. They're all from different modules.
Wow.
I was looking at
them. Wow.
And look at all these. Look at all the cards. Look at them. Look at all the cards. There's like thousands of them.
You know, and that's why I really like Realm.
Pat, would you like to learn about the waterfront? There's a craft lane. The tomb of the great king, Steve.
That's all, you know, and that's one of the things I really like about Lamentations of the Flame Princess specifically, because you know what Lamentations does? It does this.
Yeah, it's
Lamentations of the Flame Princess does this. James Raggy, his fucking Norwegian ass, is like, I remember how to play games with the maps, and they use squares. I'm going to keep making them with squares.
I like Lamentations. I don't know if it's the actual Lamentations guys who do it, but I know that there are people who do like illustrated walkthroughs of the encounters.
That's Lamentations. I know. I think I know the one you're thinking of, the God That Crawls, that has like the frog face people at the very end.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like you see a walkthrough of it, and it's kind of like an illustrated walkthrough. It's kind of like almost like a storyboarded. Like at first, your party
goes
here.
That's how they did it.
Yeah,
yep. Yeah.
And I'm like, that is would be perfect for anything, because I'm reading through Princes of the Apocalypse right now, and Princes of the Apocalypse is amazing.
Yeah,
it is. You could spend probably doing that book. You could probably spend a year and a half just doing Princes of the Apocalypse. Yeah.
My only issue with 5th edition is it's really hard to call it an issue. It's only an issue because I'm a grognard, and it's just that things are too strong. Characters are too strong. And monsters are too weak.
Yeah, it's basically from what I'm kind of
I don't
want to
shit on it at all.
No,
I think 5th edition's great.
And I think I get it. I get what you're saying too, because part of AD&D was that your character would die.
Right. There was a risk.
There's not a lot of risk of your character dying. But
even though your character's weaker than 4th, there's still little risk.
I think people, they realize that people get attached to their characters, and right. They say, you know what, there's no real point in the character dying.
And I think that's not to try and derail again, but I think that's a weird thing about current RPGs, and it's because of 3.5, because 3.0, 3.5 characters were so strong, they would just survive way longer than normal D&D characters.
Yeah.
And DMs would run their, like, whatever adventures they had. And I think modules were a big difference, because, like, for me, when I think game, I think you've made your character to play this module that I'm like, look, dude, it's Temple of Elemental Destruction. Like, it's a hard-ass module. Make a character. And you make a character that's ready to take on that temple thing. You don't, like, have your character survive. But if your character survives the module, and Pat's character survives the module, the next module I run, Temple of Undead Destruction, the two of you, you're like, fuck yeah, dude, our two badasses are ready to go. Like,
that's what kind of what they're doing right now, because literally, Mines of Phandelver, when you go through Mines of Phandelver, it levels your character up. And what it's going to do is actually all the way through the Underdark. Underdark is going to take your character up to 20.
Doesn't Mines take your character through the Horde of the Dragon Queen and Rise of Tiamat?
Yeah, actually,
but not into Elemental Evil.
No, they do. It does go into Elemental Evil. So you have the possibility of after Phandelver going into Temple of Elemental Evil or Prince of the Apocalypse, but you don't have to. It's actually recommended that you go through Tiamat.
It has different directions, which is awesome. Yeah. That's the best.
The open world and Prince of Apocalypse is complete open world.
That's the best.
Kind of, but it's like, okay, so not giving too much away. There's the four temples of Elemental.
Yeah. You know, there's choices.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
And so you could go, like, you guys, like, oh, I'm going to go to the fire temple first and defeat the fire guy, or I'm going to go to the water temple first. And each temple is a little different flavor and everything like that.
Well, you might, if you do old school PC games, right?
Yeah.
You should find the Atari Temple of Elemental Evil video game on your PC. They did a really good job of they did a really good job of porting a tabletop game, because there's eight games, which is like, there's like, you get this far and you can end the game, or you can like double down and get this far and end the game, but you can pick whatever you want. They did a very good job.
Nice. I recommend that. That's why I'm liking Underdark, because basically Tiamat and Prince of
Minus Drift Sword.
Yeah. Temple of Elemental Evil and Tiamat are basically designed for the same level. You could probably level your character up to about 12 to 15 maybe in both of them. But Underdark is supposed to take you all the way up to 20. So.
Yeah.
And actually, rumor has it that Pendleton Ward is writing a module.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Anyone who knows what that means will be very excited.
Apparently, the rumor has it that it might actually be...
Dude, you know Pendleton Ward was a fucking AD&D guy.
Oh, yeah.
There's
a theory going around that he's writing the Wonderland one. Dungeon World.
That's very cool.
Or whatever it is.
That's very cool.
All right, so... Getting on from here, let's end this, because I don't know how much bandwidth I even fucking have anymore.
Dude, you just split it in half.
I might have to.
Make it a double cast.
It doesn't even matter. It's about bandwidth. It's not about and memory.
Well, no. So you make 1 week.
Pat doesn't understand how this works. Pat, he doesn't understand how this works.
I don't care how it works.
We only have a set number of memory.
Oh, right. I will tell you how to do it. So you know how we record our cast every other week?
Yeah.
You do the first half of this cast for 1 week. You skip our week. And then instead of us recording for the second week, you put the other one on.
That's not how it works, because we only have a set amount of memory for a month.
Wouldn't it be the same if we recorded a new cast? No. We don't record the new cast. You stick the other half on.
I see what you're saying, but you know, we don't have that much. And I have no other gaming stuff to talk about.
Fuck that bullshit, bro.
It's bullshit. All right, go to planetarbitrary.com for all your Planet Arbitrary needs. You can follow me at Twitter at Planet Arbitrary. You can follow Steve
at Game Classy.
You can follow Pat
at Past Game Reviews.
AC Stewart, Noob the Loser. Game Classy is responsible for all of his success. Just saying. Okay. I put it on the Facebook page. Oh my god, my fucking boner was so wrecked. There are three webcomic guys I want to throw the shout out to.
You just did that.
Yeah,
I want to do it again.
No. Right, so you like, comment, and subscribe.
I've got the more important thing right here.
Like, comment, and subscribe. Like, comment, subscribe to YouTube, and
we have to come up with a really good one. Let's do Splatoon for Nintendo. Let's do PT. Or Konami. Konami. Let's do Splatoon, Konami, and
Amiibo.
Splatoon. Yeah. Name this podcast Splatoon, Konami, Amiibo. With nothing else.
Oh, I get. Okay, I see what you're saying.
Splatoon, Konami, like, and Amiibo. Like,
what the fuck is he talking about?
Yes, that's the name of the cast.
Like, comment, comment, and subscribe on YouTube and on iTunes. The best way to help the podcast is to comment on iTunes. Comment on iTunes. Give us the 5 stars. That's all we ask for.
This is by far one of my most favorite casts.
Yes.
That I've ever done.
Actually, it's probably been the most frustrating to me.
Which is good, because Pat had a good time.
Yeah, I had a blast.
Pat always
and I had a good time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Handshake.
This,
no, handshake. So the
education
only one who
was always.
So the only and my wife had a good time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Wait. Tell the mic.
Y'all got any more of them elephants?
So three people had a good time, and Joe didn't have a good time.
Because
so
Joe hates fun.
It's, yeah. Joe hates fun.
It's literally my wet dream.
Yes.
At this point.
Like, comment, subscribe. Like our Facebook page. Also, listen to the other podcast. What the fuck's the name of it?
Pat's Retro Game Review Podcast.
No, the Patcast.
The Patcast.
Well,
Power Glove Patcast.
It's only, yeah, now it's, that I'm finally here, you sons of bitches, it's fucking play on
it's
play
only
on
the
podcast.
It's only the Patcast when he's Pat Bale.
Okay.
When he's not Pat Bale, it's Pat's Retro Video Game Review Podcast with the Power Glove.
The Power Glove Patcast.
Yes.
The Power Glove Patcast.
Yes.
With the blanket cape.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, not the blanket. With the Power Mat cape.
The Power Mat.
Yeah.
Fool.
Yeah.
All right.
I am truly a wizard of the NES.
Legitimately, I had a very, very, very good time recording this podcast. It was a lot of fun.
It was going to be a lot of blank space when Steve goes to the bathroom.
That's
three
fine.
Three times throughout the podcast.
Wait, you guys didn't talk while I was
peeing? Oh, we did, but. Well,
then it should be good.
A little bit.
Unless you think I'm the only thing that carries the Game Classy podcast, which I mean, I can't deny.
What if I just cut this all down and Steve's just like, it's just
not
him going.
Not in it at
he's
all.
Just, he's just
not me.
It's just
then
him
you'd
going.
Have 20 minutes of content.
It would be him going, yes, no, well, you see, and then it's just cut off.
That'd
right
be
there.
Good stuff.
Yeah. All right. Pat, until next
no!
time.
No.
Till next time, play on.
Game Classy.